So maybe we can draw it out in your patient because she's got a high TPS, 90%,
yep.
but she also has a genomic alteration there.
Yeah.
So how are you thinking through and what to do with her?
Well, so I think we have to understand that tumor proportion score is not like these oncogenic abnormalities, which are truly categorical variables. You have them or you don't have them. TPS is, well, two things. One is it's a continuous variable, and the other is it's associated with benefit. It's not actually a true predictive biomarker that says if you've got this, you're absolutely going to benefit, in the same way that tumor mutation burden is associated with benefit. So when you get both, how do you figure that out? Well, we can use this lady as an example. So we initially put her on crizotinib, and she had, consistent with many people with a MET exon 14, she had a great response, lasted for about 7 months, and then she progressed in the brain.
Hold on. Before you keep going, let's just stay focused on the first-line decision. Although, when was that?
This was about a year ago.
Okay, so things changed so much in the last year, you have to know kind of when this was happening. But before you go on, before you get off the fact that this was a patient who had a targetable lesion but also had a high TPS score, and I'm not sure if that's very common, for example, with EGFR, but I have heard people talking about ALK patients having high PD-L1 levels, but maybe it doesn't mean it's correlated.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. So one of the things that we know that many of these oncogenic abnormalities don't respond very well to immunotherapy. And some people, I think, have mistakenly said, well, that's because they don't have high PD-L1. And that's not true. There is a significant proportion of EGFR and ALK and MET and all of the other ones who have very high PD-L1. But it doesn't mean the same thing.
So just to be clear, though, because I've heard this thing specifically about ALK. So you don't see it more with high PD-L1 levels with ALK compared to the other targetable tumors.
No, probably. I mean, I think in ALK, I've seen really high 90%+ levels in 30 to 40% of ALK, and they don't respond to immunotherapy. So far, my response rate is zero.
So, and you know, I hear that a lot from investigators, and we just did this survey that you actually are one of 25 investigators. We're writing up the abstract as we speak. It's due in a couple of days because we wanted to see what people were doing. And what we saw is that clearly with certainly EGFR and ALK, ROS1, and MET exon 14 and BRAF.
Yeah.
They're all given targeted therapy. It doesn't matter what the TPS is.
Exactly. I think you prioritize the much more predictive biomarker that you can really take to the bank. It's categorical. It's there or not. Whereas the association of PD-L1 with benefit varies depending on its context. And we're starting to realize that in the context of a driver oncogene, PD-L1 levels may be up for something which is called intrinsic induction. I.e., PD-L1 levels go up because it's directly downstream of the oncogene, probably through the RAS-RAF-MEK pathway. And it's nothing to do with being induced by T cells sniffing around your cancer trying to do an immune response.
But is it true or not true that, for example, patients with targetable mutations in general have higher PD-L1 levels than people without?
There's a spectrum. So there are some people who have stone cold negative, some who have huge levels. The point we're trying to go for here is that even if you have high levels, that rule of prioritizing the oncogene doesn't go away.
So I just want to point out one thing, and again, sort of get your take as one of the investigators who's been telling us what they're doing. We'll get into some of the other things that we saw. But in terms of this issue, in terms of these patients who have high TPS scores but targetable mutations, so it's kind of not much of a no-brainer to sort of put EGFR and ALK aside because the label for treatment says, and the trials excluded them.
Yeah.
But I don't see anything in these package inserts about these other genomic alterations. And, you know, I guess you can make the theoretical biologic argument. But what we saw, too, is when people got into RET and HER2, they started to move more towards using checkpoint inhibitors, using chemo rather than targeted therapy upfront, more of a wild type paradigm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I certainly, as part of your survey, I was one of the people that voiced that. And so you have to understand that not every driver oncogene has so far producing response rates of 80%+ and PFS of 9, 10, 12 months. So HER2 and RET would be great examples where it's been a little disappointing. Now, is it a little disappointing because they're not all uniformly oncogenically driven? Is it disappointing because we don't yet have the drugs? I don't know. That's a work in progress. There was a little bit of data at ASCO this year and maybe last year that, for example, RET gene rearrangements, the response rate is running about 30%. And that's partly because we've been repurposing rather dirty drugs, sorafenib, sunitinib, cabozantinib.